The following is a lecture given by His Holiness Jayapataka Swami on April 22, 1984 in Atlanta, Georgia. The class begins with a reading from the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, Chapter 9, Verse 49 and 50.
মহামাধব প্রেম ফল পেট ভরি খাই মাতিল সকল লোক হাসে নাচে গায়। মহামাধব প্রেম ফল পেট ভরি খাই মাতিল সকল লোক হাসে নাচে গায়।
জয় গৌরনিতাই। Translation: The fruit of love of Godhead distributed by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is such a great intoxicant that anyone who eats it, filling his belly, immediately becomes maddened by it, and automatically he chants, dances, laughs, and enjoys. With repetition, the fruit of love,
of Godhead
distributed by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu,
is such a great intoxicant,
that anyone who eats it,
filling his belly,
immediately becomes maddened by it, and automatically, chants,
dances,
laughs,
and enjoys.
Text 50.
Keho gora gori kar, keho gora gori jai, keho tahunkar, dekhiya nandito hoya hashe malaka.
Translation: when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the great gardener, sees that people are chanting, dancing, and laughing, and that some of them are rolling on the ground, and some of them are making loud humming sounds and shouting out, he smiles with great pleasure. Purport: this attitude of, with repetition, when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the great gardener, sees that people are chanting, dancing and laughing, and that some of them are rolling, on the floor, and some are making loud humming sounds, and shouting loudly, he smiles with great pleasure. Purport: this attitude of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is very important for persons engaged in the Hare Krishna movement of Krishna consciousness. In every center of our institution, ISKCON, we have arranged for a love feast every Sunday. Appropriate purport today. And when we actually see people come to our center, chant, dance, take prasad, become jubilant, and purchase books, we know that certainly Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is always present in such transcendental activities. And he is very pleased and satisfied. Therefore, the members of ISKCON must increase this movement more and more according to the principles we are presently trying to execute. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, thus being pleased, will smilingly glance upon them, bestowing his favor, and the movement will be successful. This is not an unusual. This is something which rarely we find, but sometimes great rich people, they like to just give out, put on big festivals, give out free charity. Used to be a movie, a television show when I was a child called The Millionaire. Used to just give out $1 million. Like to see how the people enjoyed. I haven't watched television since then, but there was one thing where someone would win a opportunity to go into a grocery store and have a half hour or 10 minutes to take as much as they could, and so they just go mad. And of course, that idea of seeing someone just taking enjoying giving out some charity very freely. That's a rare quality. But every quality that you see, every good quality you see, and of course even in Krishna, even the bad qualities you see, they are transformed into something good. Or they are, in Him they are good. But everything is coming from Krishna, because He's the original. Aham sarvasya prabhava. Everything is originating from Him. Janmadasya ataha. So naturally, that quality is also there in Krishna. So how does Krishna manifest that that quality that's manifested or displayed in the personality of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? That He simply gives out unlimited mercy, and He enjoys seeing the people become completely ecstatic, dancing and laughing and even rolling on the floor. This gives Him great pleasure. So, that's the mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But His anxiety is that, how many people can I personally distribute it to? Therefore He asks everyone to come forward and help in His great welfare activity. To give out the mercy without any discrimination. To give out the mercy to everyone. Freely. So, just as when Lord Ramachandra, He came and He requested all of His devotees to assist Him in getting back Sita, who was stolen by Ravan. And Hanuman and all of the monkeys and other devotees, they assisted Him in waging war against Ravan. And they rescued Sita. And in Krishna's pastimes, of course, Arjuna wanted to give up fighting, but He told him that if you want to give up fighting, that's your prerogative, but you'll be a failure in life. The best thing, of course, is to fight because you're a Kshatriya. But even more exalted is if you just do what I want. And I want that there should be this final confrontation, so that once and for all, a proper God-conscious administration is established in the world. Well, specifically in the other ages, when Krishna came, He would come often as a Kshatriya. And even in that Leela, in that pastime, He would come as a warrior sometimes. Because Kshatriya, of course, is considered even in the Vedas as Naradeva, or God on earth. God amongst men, because His duty is to protect the common man, which is a representative of Krishna, who God is ultimately the supreme protector. But Krishna is known as Triyuga. He only comes as God in the three ages, golden, silver, and bronze. He doesn't come in the Iron Age as the Lord Himself. Although He comes in His His original self descends, but in disguise. There's a covered incarnation, or Channa Avatar. It's a hidden incarnation. He comes disguised as His own devotee. So in that role, He doesn't take up the sword or the Sudarshan Chakra normally to punish the miscreants and protect His devotees in that way. Instead, this time His mission is He wants to just make everyone completely ecstatic in love for Godhead. He's defeating them by love. But just as the monkeys, or as Arjuna and the Pandavas and other devotees would always assist the Lord, similarly, Lord Chaitanya is asking for assistance from His devotees. But instead of taking up swords and bows and arrows and so on, just take up the coal, the madranga, the kartals, the books, and give people transcendental inspiration to take up the chanting of the holy names of God, to take up the distribution of transcendental knowledge and enlightenment. People gave half a chance to the devotees to hear what their message was, they would be so fortunate. Unfortunately, sometimes people are so busy. Once Srila Prabhupada told a story that was later made into a skit about some man who was so busy carrying stones, he had no time to hear what the devotees had to say. He was such a mudha, working hard like an ass. No time. This idea of no time, of course, was epitomized in an English, I think it's in the Alice in Wonderland, the Mad Hatter. No time. Running here and there, he has no time. So modern society is running so quick, they have no time to know how to be really happy, how to actually understand what is the purpose of life, where they're going. They're going, they have no time, but where they're going. And it's, so many things happen, it's so fast. Even the devotees, we find ourselves hard put. I wanted to figure out my itinerary for South America, but so many things happening, I have no time. People phoning, people coming to discuss. So, what to speak, the karmis, they have no time at all to understand about Krishna consciousness. But they have so much time to spend in this Easter weekend. How many people are going to church and how many are going to drink, or how many are doing both? You see, very little inclination for spiritual life. And whatever inclination is there, of course, that is also not properly directed to actually achieving love for Godhead. They're directed towards loving their family, loving their nation, which are inferior priorities. Hardly are they directed to really love God. Nor, even if they were directed to love God, they don't know the process how to love God. Ado sraddha satsanga anarthana vitti bhajana kriya nishtha ruchi ashakti bhava prema. But what are the stages of love for God? How one develops love for Godhead? How all the dirt is cleansed from the heart by abadhani sudunati, by this glorifying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The secret where they'll find out. Who is telling them? It's there in all the holy books. But practical example is required. So that practical example was given by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as it mentioned in the previous verse, Lord Chaitanya taught by his own example. He taught what is real love for Godhead. When he would chant and dance, he would not be thinking about anything else but simply giving transcendental satisfaction to Krishna, the Supreme Person. And the intensity of love that he displayed is inconceivable. So much so that even today, 500 years later, anyone who takes up the chanting of Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, 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 Hare Hare, they can also feel the same transcendental ecstasy that was exhibited by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of course, in its minute quantity compared to his. But that minute quantity for us is still an ocean, a tidal wave, far more than any other happiness that you can experience on the material plane. Material happiness is like a roller coaster ride. Sometimes you're up on the top and sometimes you're down on the bottom. But the whole situation is non-stop fear and suffering. Just depends on your attitude. If you want to think you're having fun, you're having fun. If you want to be frightened, you're frightened. Because the actual situation is fearful. But if you want to think it's fun, then you're having fun. And you're up, you're down like that. You feel a little relief as you come up, and then kabe naraka dubai kabe swarga utai danda jana raja jano nadite chubai.
Sometimes person is given heavenly existence, all opulence, all fame, beauty, longevity, education, learning, and sometimes one is put in a hellish condition, suffering, disease, litigation, infamy, and mental anxiety, suffering, so on. And these things are changing. Nothing stays constant. Suffering doesn't stay constant. The misery doesn't stay constant. But chanting Hare Krishna, that stays constant. If you continue to chant Hare Krishna continuously, you will experience the same transcendental relishment in different flavors. Flavor may change, but the relishing doesn't stop. There's no mixture of material misery. Like Srila Prabhupada explained that material happiness is like sweet rice. Sweet rice is very wonderful to taste, milk and rice preparation. But this sweet rice is unique. It has sand in it. So even though you get a sweet taste, there's always the grit. Material happiness is not pure. It's mixed with various degrees of inconvenience and misery. But the happiness given by Lord Nitai Gaur, that prema ananda, that is completely unmixed, pure. It doesn't have any material suffering mixed with it. Material suffering is due to our material attachments. Attachment to our psychological, physical situation, attachment to our material life. That is the only cause for our suffering. If we are completely Krishna conscious, then there's no suffering at all. Haridas Thakur was being beaten in 22 marketplaces. He didn't suffer. Didn't experience any suffering as an ordinary person would. Whatever pain he experienced, he didn't consider it to be suffering at all. So of course, to preach Krishna consciousness and to tolerate these inconveniences, that is of course an austerity. But it's a type of burden of love. It is mentioned that there are different kinds of burdens of love. Just like a mother carries the baby. So it's a burden, but she loves her baby. So it's a burden of love. Newlywed wife, she carries the burden of her husband on their honeymoon, but when they're making, you know, when they're having their relation, but that's a burden of love. They tolerate those things. So there's so many material burdens of love that people tolerate. So our burden of love is that we tolerate this inconvenience of telling people that they should become ecstatic in love for Godhead even though they're completely disinterested. Because we know that that's pleasing to our loved one, Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Lord Nityananda, and their pure devotees in the cyclic succession, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Acharya Dev, Srila Bhaktipada, and so on. And that austerity involved, of course, that is considered very insignificant compared to the idea of pleasing our loved one. So Prabhupada here, he said, therefore the members of ISKCON must increase this movement more and more according to the principles that we are presently trying to execute. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, thus being pleased, will smilingly glance upon them, bestowing his favor, and the movement will be successful. So we simply use whatever intelligence, whatever ability, whatever energy we have, how to increase this movement more and more. Either in the front line or in some supportive role. And then we'll get the smiling glance of Lord Chaitanya upon us. Text 51. E mala karakai e prema fal nirabadhi matharohe bivasa bhival. E mala karakai e prema fal nirabadhi matharohe bivasa bhival. The great gardener, Lord Chaitanya, personally eats this fruit, and as a result, he constantly remains mad, as if helpless and bewildered. Translation. The great gardener
Lord Chaitanya,
personally eats this fruit,
and as a result,
he constantly remains mad.
as if helpless and bewildered. Purport. It is the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to act himself and teach the people. He says, Aponi achari bhakti korilo prachar. One must act himself and then teach. This is the function of a real teacher. Unless one is able to understand the philosophy that he speaks, it will not be effective. Therefore one should not only understand the philosophy of the Chaitanya movement, but also implement it practically in one's life. While chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sometimes fainted and remained unconscious for many hours. He prays in his Shikshashtaka. Yugaitam nimishena chakshusha pravishaitam sunnaitam jagat sarvam govinda virahena me. O Govinda, feeling your separation, I am considering a moment to be like 12 years or more. Tears are flowing from my eyes like torrents of rain, and I am feeling all vacant in the world in your absence. Shikshashtaka 7. This is the perfectional stage of chanting the Hare Krishna mantra and eating the fruit of love of Godhead, as exhibited by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. One should not artificially imitate this stage, but if one is serious and sincerely follows the regulative principles and chants the Hare Krishna Maha mantra, the time will come when these symptoms will appear. Tears will fill his eyes and he will be unable to chant distinctly the Maha Mantra, and his heart will throb in ecstasy. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that one should not imitate this, but a devotee should long for the day to come when such symptoms of trance will automatically appear in his body. Thus ends Srila Prabhupada's purport. Srila Prabhupada says that unless one is able to understand the philosophy that he speaks, it will not be effective. So what does it mean to understand the philosophy? Factual understanding means you practice it. If you really understand the philosophy, that means you're going to practice it. In India you find that there are many pandits. Even in the West you find these scholars. The scholars, they may academically understand the nomenclature of a particular philosophy or ideology in some kind of a superficial way, a categorical way. But that's a very non-consequential understanding. To actually understand Krishna consciousness means that to understand it and to practice it. Real understanding means that actually you know how to practice it, and if you really understood Krishna consciousness, you would practice it. Because it's not simply a philosophy to know, it's a philosophy to understand. And you cannot understand it unless you practice it. Theoretically, you can know about it. But to understand it, you must practice it. Because it is a philosophy based upon personal, individual realization. To understand what is love for Godhead, how will you know unless you're dancing and laughing and rolling on the ground? And just to imitate that, that also won't do. Just if you imitate, someone may jump up and down. I've seen the Sufis and other groups sometimes, I think in South here, they have some groups that roll around and everything. But the point is that to actually practice God consciousness and chanting the holy names until spontaneously from within one, these tears come, the desire to jump and chant comes, the spontaneous laughter comes. Not that one artificially forces it. Not otherwise you could put chilies in your nose or something and somehow or another you could force tears to come. That's another thing. Or like a dramatic performance, some people, they're very expert, they can make emotion come. Dramatic school, they train one to think that your mother's sick, they start to cry, or think that you're just got $1 million. And they try to be able to spontaneously make those emotions come. It's not like that. That's very superficial.
But to chant and actually write from the core of your heart, right from the spiritual platform, that contact with Krishna is established, and that contact creates these bikaras, or these changes in consciousness, which produce crying or laughter. In fact, the mind is practically like a bystander. It's just standing on the side, doesn't even really know what's going on. It's beyond the mind. Nothing to do with the mind. It's coming from the spiritual platform. And the mind is, of course, enjoying along with the senses, but it is something which is even beyond the comprehension of the mind. Mentally, this ecstasy cannot be understood. You can understand material happiness and distress to a certain degree, but this is beyond the understanding capacity of the mental strata. The mind is left on the side during these pastimes, so to speak. In other words, it is coming from a higher platform. It is not originating on the mental platform. Therefore, all one has to do is chant and practice, and then spontaneously, when one gets serious or when one gets a special mercy, these type of ecstatic symptoms appear. So one should long for that, should desire it. When will I have love for Krishna? When will I have love for Godhead? That longing should be there, but one shouldn't artificially try to impose it. It will happen in its own accord. So then, why do we follow regulative principles? Why do we avoid taking meat and fish and eggs and intoxication and other extramarital sexual relations and so on, and gambling? Because to actually experience love for Godhead, those ecstasies, the mind has to be in its natural state. The consciousness, rather, should be in its natural state. And from there, it can be elevated to the spiritual platform of appreciating the ecstasies of love for Godhead. But if already the mind is being completely distorted, the consciousness is being affected by these type of very gross materialistic activities, well, it will not be in a receptive attitude to be able to experience these very subtle, transcendental, spiritual experiences. It will already be, just as much as someone who is completely intoxicated won't be able to appreciate a fine art or music in the same way someone who is in a very sober and conscious platform. So these type of activities are a form of material intoxication. They make the mind absorbed in a material consciousness. So these grossest of material contaminating, lowering activities, they have to be given up. Then one can experience love for Godhead. Well, Lord Chaitanya is so kind that even if one chants, even when one's not perfectly giving up all these things, still one gets a little taste. It's not that even you're drunk, that if you see a beautiful symphony, something you'll perceive, but not you won't get the complete idea. You'll get some idea. Well, even you're materially contaminated, there's a chance that if still somehow or another you chant, you can still experience that there's something special about that. But you won't get a clear idea. Then you give up. That's enough of an impetus to, just for some time, as an experiment, if nothing more, then at least you try to chant sincerely for some period of time without all these distractions, and then one can perceive the full. I think I explained one time how Haridas Thakur, he was chanting, and he was just so much, he was completely filled in ecstasy. Actually, what happened was there was a snake charmer, and he was playing the flute and making a snake dance. So suddenly he started to sing the pastime of Kaliya Damana, where Krishna danced on the serpent Kaliya's head, and this way defeated And the beautiful song explaining how that serpent was so fortunate to get the lotus impression of Krishna's lotus feet on his head. So in this way, when Haridas Thakur heard that devotee, who was a snake charmer by profession, chanting, he began to dance in ecstasy. And he fell into trance, and he became completely unaware of the external surroundings. He didn't realize that there were literally, as he was dancing in ecstasy and chanting the names of Krishna, that so many villagers had gathered. He was just loudly chanting and dancing ecstatically, jumping and twirling. And in this way, he was so ecstatic. But nearby there was one brahmana who was reading fortunes or something, and people would be coming to him, and suddenly no one paid any attention to him. They were all looking at Haridas Thakur. They were paying obeisances to Haridas Thakur. But Haridas Thakur, he wasn't at all aware of the presence of anyone else. He was at that time absorbed in trance of chanting. So it wasn't that he was chanting to get some kind of adoration from the common people, but he had, being so advanced that sometimes these advanced devotees, they fall into trance when they get some spiritual impetus, and they just lose awareness of the external world. They become stunned, or they become ecstatic, or they become mad. So like this, Haridas Thakur was dancing practically in madness of love for Godhead. So this snake charmer, he became envious. And so what he did, he thought that why he's getting so much adoration, anybody can dance like that. What's the big deal? So he stood up and he started to jump and dance. You know, but when you dance like that, I mean, any devotee can see, devotee who has even tasted a slight bit of transcendental ecstasy or bliss, when they see someone artificially imitating, they can immediately pick up that this person is bogus. I know even when in Rath Yatra 1968, where I joined, there was one bogus yogi from India who came, and he started jumping up and down with the devotees, and everyone could understand that this guy was not actually experiencing transcendental bliss. He was just showing off. It's some stiffness, it's something unnatural. You can see that it's something that is from a different planet. And a devotee, even it may not be artistically perfect, it might not be musically perfect, it might not be, you know, according to the art of dance or whatever, it may not be in the proper form or time or whatever, but you can see that there's something very spontaneous and natural about it, which someone who's chanting in kirtan, just trying to show off, it just comes in a different, like a different vibration. It's not the same. It's in a different... We've seen it in so many cases. So I'm sure anyone could experience that if they've seen such a thing. So here, this snake charmer, he could see that this Brahman dumping up and down, dancing, he's completely bogus. That Haridas Thakur is actually a pure devotee. He's actually dancing in love for Godhead. And here, this Brahmana is envious of him. Therefore, he's trying to show off just to get cheap adoration of the people. Then on top of it, the Brahmana, after jumping and dancing and making a whole show, he fell down, boom, on the ground and started to quiver and shake as if he had fallen in like complete samadhi and trance. And that got the... Meanwhile, Haridas Thakur didn't even know what's going on. He's just dancing and kind of going off. And snake charmer, he became so angry that this, he just stood up and said, told everyone, this person is a complete imposter. So what do you mean? He's Brahmana. He went and gave him a good kick. If he's in trance and he won't get up, he'll be impervious to this. Bow, kick. Whoa! He started screaming, you know. And so then everyone, see, he's completely trying to cheat you. Haridas Thakur is a real devotee. He's actually in a trance of ecstasy and samadhi. And this person simply tried to cheat you. The people became so angry, they picked up sticks and stones and they started running after the Brahmin, ran for his life, being chased by all the villagers and kids. So, this is the actual thing, of course. Whenever there's real devotees,
And then when they get success in preaching, when they get success in tasting love for Godhead, and then they inspire others, then there's always some imitation people they want to take advantage. They think, oh, I can do the same thing. But they don't follow the authorized system. Instead, they simply imitate and try to cheat the people. In any kind of spiritual movement, that is always the danger. For every bona fide movement, there are imitations. Nonetheless, we have to go on with our purpose, which is to give the pure message of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Give people Krishna prasadam, let them chant and dance in ecstasy. And if they follow this system, they'll be able to experience the actual sentiment, the actual experience of love for Godhead, which is the real happiness that everyone is hankering for. And the more that the movement expands, the more that people become swept away. We should personally be very careful that in case we start to dry up, the floodwaters of love for Godhead start to decrease, that somehow we should try to again increase that by very carefully chanting, by associating with senior devotees. Somehow we should again build up our water level, the floods, and then we remain secure. This especially Narottam Das Thakur, he prayed to Lord Nityananda. Haha, Prabhu Nityananda, Premananda Sukhi. Oh my dear Lord Nityananda, you are always filled with the ecstasy of pure love for Godhead. Akona doya koro ami boro dukhi. Kindly have immediately your mercy upon me of this pure love for Godhead, because I am very unhappy. I'm very miserable and unfortunate. You see, so we can pray to Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda that we are the most fallen and they're the most merciful. Since they're the most merciful, we're the most fallen. Therefore, we can claim that we have a priority for being delivered. Right? If someone says, I want to give out charity, who is the most needy? Right? The most needy will get first. So we are the most needy. We should have that attitude. This is humility. There's no one who needs your mercy more than me. There's no one more fallen, more unfortunate, with less devotion, less enthusiasm, less spiritual qualification. Therefore, I need your mercy most of all. We should pray like that, but we of course shouldn't try to act like that. We should try sincerely to act in a way that is pleasing to Lord Chaitanya. But we can present our case as being actually the most needy. And we should feel like that, that we need His mercy more than anyone. Everyone else is so advanced. They're so expert. They're so enthusiastic. They're so fixed in their spiritual master's service. They're in every respect so qualified. Therefore, they don't need the mercy as much as I do. I need the mercy more because I'm in an inferior position. This is the art our previous acharyas have shown of attracting the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Nityananda. And this way one can also avoid becoming envious of others. You can think others are so nice. Let me get the mercy because I need it more. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Are there any questions? About who in the spiritual world? Well, in Mathura, then Ugrasena, he's the king, and Krishna's a young man, he's assisting. So many pastimes, all the Mathura residents receive Krishna. And Krishna's loved by everyone. In Dwarka, of course, Krishna's the king. Or even he respects Ugrasena or someone else, but basically he's the ruler. And he has got so many unlimited palaces, of course. He's got his... there, this Saukpurakya and Saukya. There is Swakiya Rasa is exhibited, and in Goloka, of course, Borakiya. It's not the time. But she came back. She was recovered. Prabhupada was also recovered. The person that tried to take Prabhupada away died. They thought that she was solid gold. They thought Prabhupada was gold. Because they're so beautiful and they're so effulgent. And those people began, just like they took away Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They saw his ornaments. He was so effulgent. But then they had to return back. But there should be steel gates. The main problem was Prabhupada told us that there would be armed robbery. She became more opulent. The same deities were there in a grass hut, but then nobody thought that when they put them in the big temple, everything, so they became low. So you need the... We used to have steel gates in the inside of the temple, but when they expanded the new temple room, they never got around to making steel gates. I told them dozens of times. I said I personally put the money on the table to buy the gates. But they couldn't decide on what the design should be. So I never got around to getting it, you know. So now they're putting collapsible, this, that, and they forget about the design, you know, but now it's a little too late. So it's better to have precaution. In terms of emergency, one thing is that we found that the devotees didn't really know what to do. They found, you know, completely unprepared. And we had hired guards, and you couldn't depend on the hired guards. One of them set alarm off, but the others just disappeared. And the hired gunman, he had... when he heard all the gunshots of the big band of gang, all armed to the teeth. You know, they accuse the devotees sometimes if we have a gun or have something, but you know, the world is so terrible. If you don't have your own weapons to defend yourself, like licensed arms, how can you survive? The police were there, they refused to come because they told them, we don't want to go right in the middle of it, we might get hurt. You got a wife and children, you know. We'll go, you know, let it cool down a little bit. So really, the devotees, certain percentage of them, should become expert in defending. And in an emergency, everyone should know what to do. I mean, they should at least know, you know, if they're the kind of person that doesn't know how to do any kind of defensive activity, not at least get in the way, maybe phone the police or just something, you know, like in some kind of an emergency. Of course, there we're way out in the country, and the danger of being attacked by these big gangs, which they still have in India, I don't think they have in America so much. They used to have in the Wild West big gangs of robbers and things. I don't know if they have it in America anymore, but they have in India. I mean, here maybe the bicycle clubs or something. Hmm? Well, so there they have this kind of a thing, and just have to be prepared. It might come like that in the after the Third World War, people become looting and things like that, trying to get anything. It's good to have steel gates in front of the deity, so that, you know, no madman or envious person can just run in there. And they're putting in New Orleans. And now in the new temples, we're designing in Mayapur, is very much security conscious. And just like when Mayapur floods, they said that means that the whole world should be flooded by love for Godhead from the holy dawn. So the demons are trying to take Lakshmi, goddess, the goddess, the original goddess of fortune. Of course, the origin of the goddesses of fortune. That means that all over the world, the people they want to take the fortune of the Krishna conscious movement away, and therefore. The devotees, they should be very careful to protect the goddess of fortune and make her unavailable for being taken. Of course, she'll be returned, but we should take the precaution that the demons cannot... when our movement didn't have, you see, if you have opulent things and people there, they have nothing to it. Attract them, but when you have some opulent properties and demons that become they want to take those and enjoy them for themselves. So those have to be somehow secured. Here in the West, we find that there are certain groups of people that they want to try to attack the assets which we have contributed to Krishna. So now we have to take precautions all over the world so that they cannot do that. Any other question? Of course, we should see everything that happens as by Krishna's mercy. Even like sometimes a devotee is criticized what appears to be abstrusely unjust in one circumstance. But out of humility, the devotee can understand that maybe in this area I don't deserve it. It doesn't seem that I deserve it as bad as I'm getting it. But certainly there's so many other areas which I'm not getting it, which I really deserve it. But no, but I've been able to conceal it in so many ways. So Krishna, you know, he knows that we deserve, you know, when we get some sauce, it must be that this is Krishna's mercy upon us, that somehow or another we should get a little bit of mercy in that form, little criticism or something. Maybe the person giving the criticism seems that, well, he's not exactly in focus in this, it's a little bit out of perception, but surely in other areas, just like sometimes people get away with one thing, but then another thing. So, of course, the other thing is, as we mentioned yesterday, that it's the duty of acharyas and of leaders to praise and to criticize. So we shouldn't be very sensitive. We shouldn't take it personally, because, of course, fame and infamy, that's always there in the material world. And we should take it as an impetus. You see, sometimes you get praise. You shouldn't, by getting praise, one shouldn't think that, oh, I'm very wonderful. I should think this is somehow the mercy of Guru that I was able to do this thing, by Guru and Krishna's mercy. And if someone gets some criticism, even though it seems maybe sometimes it's disproportionate to the actual fault, one should take it that, well, this is also Krishna's mercy. I should be humble and see maybe there are some areas I can improve. And sometimes one gets the criticism and one goes on continuing doing one's service, doing one's duty. And then the actual situation, just like, of course, even Srila Prabhupada, sometimes certain persons just couldn't appreciate his contribution to society, to Krishna consciousness. But he knew that he had to carry out his duty to Guru and Krishna. And so he did that. And of course they were pleased. And of course when it's outside people, then it doesn't affect one very much. If it's someone very near and or some immediate superior, someone whom one respects more or is more intimately connected with, then of course it affects one more. Still, that's also to be tolerated, not to be accepted personally, but more philosophically. One should be a little introspective. But why is Krishna, not take it that this person is doing it, not take it in that sense, but take it, why is Krishna, what is Krishna trying to teach me? Like Prabhupada, he saw that, all right, the other God brothers or the other people, they don't appreciate. So this is just simply telling me. Prabhupada is his Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur is telling me that we have to establish ourselves independently. Of make our movement, you see, at that time he tried to get help from other God brothers to establish the Krishna conscious movement there, but they weren't appreciative so much. So then he made Krishna consciousness, you see. But that was a different, I mean, that wasn't critical, that was just complete, anyway, we don't even discuss those things. So that was another thing. But criticism means you have to see the mood also. What is criticism? If somebody tells you something
with the idea of trying to increase your devotional service. This is not, that's like an inspiration. That's just an encouragement. Sometimes encouragement is given in a negative form and sometimes in a positive form. That's encouragement. That's not actually a criticism. Criticism means when you're actually saying, well, you're doing bad. I don't like you, you know. You're no good or something. You are bad. That's criticism. And someone may offer some suggestion, which may be in a negative or a positive form, for how to improve your service. Sometimes you may say you're doing very good. That means it's encouragement. You're doing good. Keep it up. And sometimes someone may say you're doing good, but you could do better. And who does better, he'll be rewarded accordingly by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. So then someone may feel, I'm already trying so hard, and he says I can do better. It's very inconsiderate. Didn't see how hard I... But actually that thing, alright, if someone thinks that maybe you can do better, well then you can see. Maybe I can do better. Let me see. If there's any way I can do better. That's not a criticism. It's not a personal thing. It's just some perception that in the same circumstances, possibly other devotees, they're able to do better. So then this way you can think, others, if they can do better, then why I can't do better? Maybe if others in the same circumstances are able to do more, then maybe I can also do more. Why not? That shouldn't be taken in a personal way. And if you're trying, what more can anyone ask? Shouldn't be very sensitive about these things. It's not actually a criticism. It's a suggestion for how to improve one's service. If that's not there, if everyone just whitewashes everything, then a little bit of pressure is always good. How about we should take it in a healthy, sporting attitude? Just like a coach. If the coach always tells the team man that you're all great, you're all good, then what? They'll all just sit on the bench and won't do anything, right? Sometime he has to just jab them a little bit, you know. It gets them a little fired up. Sometimes they get angry. Sometimes the coach says such a thing that he gets the team man angry. Get out there and fight. Sometimes, you know, we do our service, but we should do it even with a little more fire. I mean, maybe doing, just like, you can wash the sweep the floor, and you can take 2 hours to do it, and then you can see someone who can do it in 10 minutes. In a temple, services are such that a person can do the service in a given amount of time, but there are specific services like, say, deity worship. You're given between 5:30 to 6:15, you have to finish. Now, you can loaf within that time, but you can't go beyond a certain degree of laxness. Because you won't finish in the time. You have to bathe. This is about 100 different things you have to do, and you have to finish it within that time. Similarly in Sankirtan, if you don't put your full energy into it, you're going to come back at the end of the day and how many books will you have distributed? But there are other services where there's not that much of an intense pressure. The pressure has to come more from within. So then one can do the same service and take twice as long, and someone can do it in half the time. I know Srila Prabhupada, he would criticize, well, you take 4 hours to cook. So you can do it in 1 hour. People, 1 hour? He said, yes, you can cook 3 vegetables, dal, rice, a chutney, and chapatis in 1 hour. Impossible. And then Prabhupada said, I'll show you, and he went in there, and in 1 hour he had prepared everything. He had it completely organized. Heating up the water, this, that, everything. And then in 1 hour, he had completely cooked everything. And he couldn't make it. How he could do it? He said, you're wasting so much time. And then they tried, and they got down to 3 hours. So we should take it. Of course, there are definitely higher standards, and that we're not the highest standard. So if somebody says that, well, you can do better, well, we should take it in a humble way. And try to work for it. Yes? If you get paid for it, then they're giving money. And if you use the money in the service of Krishna, so then it would be, if you do it as a donation, so that means that then if you do it as a service to someone, that means that person is indebted to you. So therefore, that means according to law of karma, they would have to somehow repay you.
So in that regard, you would become karmically implicated with that person. Just like if somebody gives you a donation, then their karma is in that money, because they've earned that money through work and that work. So therefore, no one should take a donation for himself unless they want a karma for that. That's why you take a donation, we give it to Krishna. We take from Krishna our maintenance that we need just to subsist in a plain way, simple way. We don't take the money for our own personal wealth. So brahmanas, they could collect alms, but they would immediately use it in the service of their deity and charitable works. So they may collect any amount, the next day they'd be back to zero again. They wouldn't keep it, for they wouldn't amass it beyond a certain small, you know, percentage, which was just, you know, simple, just fix their house or whatever was needed. Brahmins would always leave very simply. And the Kshatriyas, others, they wouldn't be allowed to take charity. That's why doing service for the Vaishnavas, that's considered to be very good, because then you get spiritual benefit. Just by association with non-devotees, there could be some type of, it's not a karma. If you do something as a business and you take payment for that, well, it's a business exchange. And then if you use that money in the service of Krishna, according to the system given by the acharyas, it's a percentage system for different type of people, then you won't get karma per se, but by association there could be some kind of effect on the consciousness just by associating, by being so much talking with the people and being in such a close contact. There could be some mental effect that would have to be counteracted by spiritual practices, by spiritual association. Yes. A lot of time in the airport. Huh? Over Prashad. It's good that during the spare moments everyone discusses philosophy. Good example. The Lord Chaitanya has his own section. Yes. Separation, sometimes union, sometimes separation, but sometimes Krishna appears to Lord Chaitanya and he feels the reunion, and then sometimes separate. But that chanting, and it says that with Lord Chaitanya all the associates have male forms, and with Krishna of course they have the female forms. The gopis who appear with Krishna in female form, with Lord Chaitanya they appear in male form. Some. Those who are devotees of Lord Chaitanya, they're also in Krishna Leela. So if you're a devotee of Lord Chaitanya, then you also have a place in Krishna's pastimes. Well, of course, in the material world, the person is somewhat dormant, somewhat undeveloped. So when one is fully in the developed stage, then you simultaneously have a service. For devotees of Lord Chaitanya, also devotees of Krishna. I hope so. Hare Krishna. Of course.